Peter even goes so far as to tell Jesus how to be the Messiah. When Jesus said he is going to Jerusalem and suffer, Peter takes him aside and says, no, you can't do that. You're the Messiah. And Jesus answers him with that famous line where he says, get behind me, Satan, you're a stumbling block. And this is what I want to focus on today. He says, because you are focused on human concerns, not on God's concerns. And that's the heart of it, is the disciples were always totally preoccupied with human concerns. They were worried about their own safety and their own security, their position and power and prestige, and Jesus constantly had to keep redirecting their focus toward what was really important, toward the things of God. And that's where this passage today, the parable of the sheep and the goats, comes in, because this is exactly one of those cases where Jesus tries to shift his disciples' focus away from the things that humans care about and toward the things that God cares about. We're going to be using this passage as a theme for our Lenten season. So until Easter, you're going to hear Pastor Toby preach about it. And Ann Kearns is going to be teaching a Sunday school class based on it. And we're going to have special guests and visitors from our congregation and community sharing about their lives and about the work and ministry they're doing. But today I want to focus on this text in its context. And how Jesus uses it to shift his disciples' attention. You see, Jesus almost never told stories as one-offs in isolation. He always told stories in groups. And then they were always within, especially in the book of Matthew, they were always in these long speeches that he would give. And all the stories that he tells, they work together to make some greater point. And when we read the stories in isolation, a lot of the time we lose that. And this story comes at the very end of one of those long speeches that Jesus gives. And it's kind of the cornerstone, the key, the story that acts to interpret all the stories that he tells before. And it also acts as a climax to his ministry, because this is really the last real teaching that he gives before he goes to Jerusalem and his arrested and crucified. So let's dig in and see how this passage functions in its context. To do that, we have to go all the way back to the beginning of Matthew chapter 24, when the disciples come to Jesus with a question. And they want to know when the end of the age is going to come. And they also want to know maybe if Jesus could tell a few signs so that they could keep a watch out and know when it's coming. And we can understand why they asked. That's why they wanted to know. They're anxious about the future. They think the end times are coming real soon. And they just want some inside information. They want that edge, that certainty, that security that comes from knowing exactly what's going to happen. And Jesus gives them this response that's so long that in our modern Bibles, we split it into two chapters. It takes up all of Matthew 24 and Matthew chapter 25. But in this response, he never actually gets around to answering their question. Because Jesus knows that their question isn't the important one. About the end times, Jesus says, you know, there will be a lot of things that you'll see. And you might think there's times. There will be wars. There will be rumors of wars. There will be earthquakes. There will be natural disasters. There will be false prophets, false messiahs, etc., etc. You'll see all of these things, but none of these things will be in the end times. And he says, when the end times do come, it's going to be so obvious that you're not going to have to wonder what's happening. No one's going to have to wonder what's happening. And then finally, he says, not even he knows the day or the hour when the end will come. It's completely impossible to predict. And then he pivots, and he tells them that they need to shift their focus. They need to stop worrying about trying to control future events and start worrying about how we're living now. The end is going to come when it comes. And the only thing that matters then is what is going on in the meantime. And then Jesus tells three stories to illustrate this point. And I'm going to kind of lay through these here. You don't have to memorize these, but I just want to give you a general sense of what goes on with the stories. The first story is a wealthy landowner who leaves on a journey, and he leaves one of his servants in charge of the estate. And Jesus says, if that servant is responsible and judicious with the master's property, and if he's kind and just to the other servants, then the master's going to get back, and he's going to be pleased with him, and he's going to give him a reward. But if the master gets back and he finds out that servant has taken it to getting drunk and beating all the other servants, the master's not going to be happy, and he's going to throw everybody out of the house. Jesus' second story is about these 10 bridesmaids who are waiting outside of a reception hall. The bridegroom is going so they can start the wedding feast. Now, the bridegroom keeps them waiting so long that they all fall asleep. And by the time he gets close, it's so late that all their lamps have run out of oil. And only five of the bridesmaids thought ahead, and they were wise enough to bring extra flasks of oil to refill their lamps. The other five were faced with the prospect of their lamps going out, so they had to run out and buy more oil from the dealers. But while the foolish bridesmaids, the ones who did bring extra oil, were out buying it, the groom shows up, he lets the other five into the banquet hall, and they start feasting. But then the five who had run out by oil get back, they find the door shut, and the groom won't open it, and they're left out in the darkness. Jesus' third story is probably one of the most famous in the New Testament. It's the parable of the talents. It's the one where this wealthy landowner goes away on a journey. But before he does, he lends pretty substantial amounts of money to three of his servants. One of them gives 5 talents of silver, the next he gives 2, the next he gives 1, and then he leaves. And we know the story. The ones who have 5 talents and 2 talents, they go out, they make good investments, they make good business decisions, and they double their money. But the one who gets 1 talent is so afraid of what his master will do to him if he loses it, that he just goes and buries it in the ground, so at least he'll know that he'll be safe when the master gets back. And when the master does get back, he sells the talents with the first 2, and he's real happy with what they've done. So he rewards them with more money and more authority. And then he sells the talents with the last one, and he says, you were too fearful to even try it, and you didn't trust me, and you didn't show yourself untrustworthy. And the master punishes him and throws him out of his household. Now, the point of all 3 of these parables is the same. The servants can't control when their master is going to get back. But they can control what they're doing in the meantime. So Jesus says, stay awake and remain alert. Live your life in such a way that no matter what time the end comes, you're ready for it. You should be conducting your affairs in such a way that the master can show up at any time and he'll be happy to see you and you'll be happy to see him. But what exactly does it mean? What does it mean to stay awake? What does it mean to remain alert? What does it mean to be the kind servant from the first parable or the wise resident from the second or the good and faithful servant from the parable of the talents? Well, Jesus tells us in the form of this parable of the sheep and the goats. As I said earlier, this is the cornerstone of Jesus' teaching in this speech. This is the key that unlocks the meanings of the 3 stories that came before. Because the Son of Man come seated on his throne to judge all of the nations of the earth is the master who comes back from his journey. He is the bridegroom who shows up for the wedding. And Jesus tells us the behavior that earns his reward and title Good and Faithful Servant. And it's this: feeding the hungry, welcoming the stranger, clothing the naked, caring for the sick, visiting prisons. Because these are the members of God's family. And we are the servants who have been left to take care of them. And this is it. This is where Jesus stops. Jesus took the question which is centered around folks' human concerns, and he shifts it around to the concerns of God. And this is where he leaves the focus. There's no more focus shifting out of this. The focus remains here because this is where the focus should always be. And after this, Jesus goes off. Jesus enters Jerusalem. He's arrested. He's crucified. He rises again and goes up into heaven. In other words, after this, the Master goes on his journey and leaves the servants in charge. And that's the time we still inhabit. We here sitting in this sanctuary in Concord, California, still inhabit that time between when the Master leaves and when the Master comes back. And we are in charge of the household. But we're just like those disciples. And we too tend to always be focusing on the wrong things. I mean, we still spend way too much time searching for signs in the end times and trying to predict when it's going to come. And we forget to focus on the time we have now. And when Jesus tells us that the world's going to be separated into two groups, the righteous and the unrighteous, we start looking around and trying to figure out who's going to be put in which group. We hear these stories, these parables, and we start looking at the people around us as kind and cruel servants, as wise and foolish bridesmaids, or as good and faithful servants, or untrustworthy and wicked ones. We judge people. And then, you know, we try to decide whether they're for ourselves, whether they're wise or foolish, whether they're faithful or unfaithful, trustworthy or untrustworthy. Jesus tells us to take a look at our own behavior, and we start taking a look at everyone else's. And then we let those judgments determine what we think they deserve, how they ought to be treated. Because the people in the parables, the foolish bridesmaids, the cruel servant, the fearful servant, they all got what they deserved, right? So we tell ourselves that if we judge the poor, if we tell ourselves that they're poor because they're lazy or because they're bad at their money, then we can see their poverty as their just result, as their just reward. And then it's not our fault, and it's not our problem. And if we judge the stranger among us as untrustworthy or dangerous and threatening, then we can justify their alienation and their disenfranchisement. And then it's not our problem. And if we look at prisoners just as criminals and lawbreakers, then we can say they're just getting what they deserve. And then we don't have to care what comes of them or how they're treated in prison. We didn't put them there. It's not our fault. It's not our problem. So judging people for ourselves and citing what they deserve sure gets us off them for a lawbreaker. But here's the thing, my friends. Jesus doesn't give us the luxury to judge. Because who is it in the parables that does the judging? Is it the kind servant who judges the cruel one? Is it the wise bridesmaids who judge the foolish ones? Is it the good and faithful servants who judge the untrustworthy one? No, of course not. It's the Master. It's the bridegroom. Judgment, as we are reminded throughout the Bible, belongs to God and to God alone. Jesus tells us over and over again not to judge. We are the servants, not the Master. And Paul writes in his letter to the Romans, "Who are you to judge the servant of another. It is before his master that he stands or falls. And he also writes, in passing judgment on another, you condemn yourself. It is God's to judge, and it is ours to give and to serve. And there's really only one thing we need to know about other people, to know how to treat them. And that is that they are members of the family of Christ, every single one of them. And Jesus takes what we do to them, or what we fail to do for them, personally. So we are called to feed the hungry and to clothe the naked, regardless of what we are. We're called to welcome the stranger, no matter how or how legally they can be among us. We are called to care for the sick, no matter what they are sick. And we're called to visit prisoners, no matter what they have been. In the parable, the master gave his servants talents of silver to take and invest and make more silver. Before he left on his journey, Jesus gave us gifts of grace and mercy. And he sent us out into the world to take that grace and to make more grace. And to take that mercy and to make it more mercy. Changing our focus from the things that humans care about to the things that God cares about isn't something we just get to do once. Because our focus tends to stray back to those human concerns. Because we're human. And being called to change our focus from judging other people's merit or worth to caring for their needs is one of the hardest things we're called to do. But Jesus tells us in this parable that it's also one of the most important things we're called to do. So together this Lent season, let us use our time well, and let us use this as one more time to focus ourselves on the things of God as individuals and as a church.